Hi, everyone. Good evening. Hi. I like this. So this is the Conk, everyone. The Conk is true storytelling, 5 minutes or less, by you, the audience members. And every month has a theme. This month's theme, or tonight's theme, is thanks a lot. I hear you've got a story. And that's great. This to get your mind churning a little, you can interpret this any way you want. Like, hey, thanks a lot. Or maybe thanks a lot. Or maybe thanks a lot. That's what comes to my mind right away. So do we have a brave soul that wants to kick off the night? No? All right. Thanks a lot, Fred.
Hi, my name is Fred Brown, and I'll be your first participant on the Conk tonight. Well, anyway, you know, as we were just talking about, thanks a lot. I mean, how do you interpret that? I'll start with Sunday of this week. My girlfriend's father and I decided to go kayaking. It was an absolutely beautiful day on Sunday, and we decided to go to the Itchtuckney. And, you know, we get down there, and it is absolutely spectacular. The light is just, you know, off the trees and reflecting off the water, and it's crystal clear. The springs are looking better than they have in a long time. So, thanks a lot. You know, it's a beautiful day. We're very happy about that. So we paddle upstream. About three quarters of the way up. It's beautiful. The turtles are out. The birds are there. We're looking for the otter. You know, the usual things that we do at the Itchtuckney. Well, three quarters of the way up, we stop and have a little break. And during this break, we usually stop. There's a little spring head there. And we, have a glass, have a drink of water, have a clementine, whatever. So as I am reaching for my clementine, that's not a joke, reaching for the clementine. As I'm reaching for the clementine, I drift into a tree is sort of an oval-shaped little space there, and there's a tree that's had been fallen in the water, and I sort of drifted into it. And I was in a fantastic mood, had a great little workout up the thing. I was there with my girlfriend's father, and we were having a fantastic time. Well, I look to my left, and in the tree, as I'm trying to pull myself out, I see a hornet's nest. And I pull myself away from the tree, and I see the hornet's nest, so I'm pulling harder. So my kayak kind of tips, and water starts getting my kayak. And at the same moment, a kayak stings me. A hornet stings me right in the chest. And I was like, thanks a lot. You know, it was just like, are you kidding me? I'm falling out of my kayak. How embarrassing. And a hornet stings me in the chest. Well, so my stuff's on the, on the bottom of the little part of the spring there, the spring head. So I dive down to get it. And I notice there's a strange taste in my mouth. And I think, I feel kind of weird. And there happened to be actually a kayak guide and two of the people he was guiding there at the same time. And this kayak guide, was like, here, you should come up and like lie up against, pull me up on the bow of his boat, because I dove down to get my stuff that had gone to the bottom. And at that point, I melted away. And I lost consciousness. The next thing I remembered, I was fighting to breathe. My airway, I had gone into anaphylaxis, and my airway had totally closed on me. and I couldn't breathe. And this went on, someone there had a cell phone and they called 911, but this went on for about 30 minutes before anyone help was there to help us. We were on the Ishtukni, and I was, you know, it was like doing squats with 400 pounds trying to get air in and out of my lungs. And I was in and out of consciousness, and they kept waking me up. And I wanted to just say thanks a lot that this kayak guide was there, and he was holding me. And then another guy came and helped as well. There's a part of this that the thanks a lot actually to the Hornet in a very different way. I've always been scared of dying. You know, I'm not in terms of limiting myself in what I do in life, but I've been always scared of death since I was a little kid. You know, since I was in first grade, it was we saw the video of Vesuvius, and that did it for me. And then someone died in my first grade class. So as I'm fighting to breathe and literally fighting for my life on Sunday, I got at the point where I was absolutely exhausted. And a notion came into my head that where I was so tired of breathing that it would just be okay if I stopped. And there was a sort of a realization or a sort of a notion that I've never had before in my life that you know, it's possible that I could die peacefully. Not here. Luckily, my life force said, "Keep breathing, keep breathing," and I did, long enough to the EMS people got there. But you know, it opened that experience. You know, thanks a lot to that Hornet. It opened my mind in a way, in my soul and consciousness, in a way that I never ever expected to happen. And I'm still kind of in shock and kind of blown away by it. So anyway, to the Hornets and to the people who helped me, to this guy Terry the guide, and to my girlfriend's father Tom, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, Fred. I'm thankful for your story and that you're here, and thanks. All right. So now that Fred's broken the ice, who's next? Yeah? All right. Is it your birthday? Is it your birthday?
I'm Lucy, and I have one that's like, you know, kind of angry at someone. Thanks a lot. Well, I was at my friend Gracie's birthday party. I remember this when I was like, I don't know, 7. We were at her birthday party, and another person just happened to be having a birthday party across the street, and they were both having, water parties sort of thing. Yeah. The person across the street's name was Jet, and he had slip and slide and water balloons. And we were all kind of dressed in nice clothes and about to leave when Gracie said, "Let's go over to Jet's and see what he's doing." So we went over there and stood around, and I specifically said, I don't want to have a water balloon thrown at me. So of course, then Jet came around the corner, and lo and behold, he threw a water balloon at me, and I got soaked. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much, Lucy. So While y'all are mustering up some courage to tell your stories about thanks a lot, I'd just like to mention that this is a Grow Radio production. Check out the website, growradio.org. Also, thanks to Satchels and Lightning Salvage for letting us host this event every month. So, onto our next contestant, storyteller. Thanks a lot, this month's theme. It's okay, just breathe through it. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Cassia. I'm totally unprepared and had no plan of telling this story, but here I am with a mic in my hand. So I am the fiddler for a klezmer band called the Vulgar Bulgars. We were on tour in our Vulgar Mobile, a Chevy Astro van that we'd bought from a friend of ours. And she was getting rid of it because it was on its last legs. But we're like, that's okay. Doesn't need to be that functional. We just needs to get us as far as we can. We're going to Canada. We're going to busk all along the way, stop and play on the street. We're going to make it all the way to Klez Canada, which is a week-long klezmer music festival. Klezmer is Jewish folk music, for anyone who doesn't know. And then we're going to come all the way back through the Midwest and play at a friend's wedding and make it all the way back to Virginia. So we have all of our stuff in the van, four of us, driving, hitting up various cities, having a great time, make it all the way up to Montreal. Klez Canada is amazing, so fun. We meet lots of great people. And there's kind of a migration between Klez Canada and Montreal and then Ashkenaz Fest, I think it's called, in Toronto, which is a couple-day-long klezmer music festival. So we're like, perfect, we'll just hit up Toronto. So we head out of Montreal, and the first thing that happens is we drive, and we don't have a place to stay in Toronto. We're like, but that's fine, we'll find a place. We're wily, we've got the van. What, you know, worst case, we can sleep in the van. So we're on the road. First thing, we drive into a giant storm front, just crazy rain, which was when we discovered that the van's roof leaked. Like trying to, you know, sort of spreading and dripping. Like, well, that makes it kind of hard to sleep in the van, but that's okay. We'll figure this out. We're wily. We get to Ashkenaz Fest. We're psyched. There's awesome music. We know a bunch of the people because we just met them at Klez Camp. So we're hanging out, see a guy that we know and sort of casually mention here. And they're like, oh yeah, we need a place to stay in Toronto. So our friend, this guy, Josh, that we just met, was like, oh, my friend, Josh, my best friend, also named Josh, has a empty apartment in his basement that, you know, he's trying to rent it out, but he hasn't yet, and you can totally cry. You guys can stay there. We're like, sweet, hooked up, awesome, great. We meet the friend Josh. He's like, yeah, you know, I haven't started renting it out, but so you guys are welcome to stay, you know, until that happens. We're like, great. Set up camp in the basement. We're busking in Toronto. Super fun. back up slightly. On the way, driving into the parking garage, the first night of music, the van starts to act a little funny. But we're like, it's okay, we'll just park it. It'll chill for a while, and then when we leave, it'll be fine. So when we leave, it's like, to go to this guy Josh's house, there's clouds of smoke coming out. I'm worried this is going to go over 5 minutes, but there's clouds of smoke coming out of the van. And now something has happened, and I don't know the technical car stuff, where the car will no longer go in reverse. So we discover this, unfortunately, partway through the wrong exit, like the kind where if you're trying to go out, then the like spikes come up so you can't go back. And also, somehow, I can't remember, managed to get out of there and get to this guy's house, park the car. We're like, okay, here we are. This is great. All we need to do is find a car mechanic. Unfortunately, it's Labor Day in Canada, which is serious business. So it's like 4 days of every business closed. And so we finally find a mechanic, and they say, yes, it's okay, it's Labor Day, we'll fix it, it'll be ready on Monday. Great, Monday. So we somehow get it there, like sputters to a stop there. We just leave all our stuff there. We take all our stuff. We leave all the stuff in the apartment, leave the van there. Monday comes, we're like, great, we're ready to get out. Josh, meanwhile, suddenly says, by the way, I'm renting the place. I found someone to rent it, so you guys have to be out on Tuesday. We're like, no problem. Van's going to be ready Monday. So Monday comes, and at this point, I have accidentally broken the tip of my bow, which is a big problem because, you know, we're a band. I need to play the fiddle. So I find a shop downtown that can fix it. And this is before cell phones. We don't have a cell phone. And so they're like, great, we'll take all the stuff because we have to be out of Josh's. So we'll take all the stuff and go to the car place, pick up the van, and come and pick you up at 4 p.m. on this corner. Like, great, perfect plan. So I go get the bow fixed. I'm sitting on the corner. It's 4. Sitting on the corner. It's 5. Sitting on the corner. 6. 7. Starting to freak out. No way to find my friends. Meanwhile, and then so then like 5 hours later, 5 or 6 hours later, this car drives up. And I guess thanks a lot could be inserted at various points of this story, really, at any point. Our drummer jumps out and is like, Cassian. I'm like, oh my God, thank you. We go to this person's car that I've never met before. He's like, get in, we'll explain later. I'm like, okay. So finally I get the whole story, which was that they carried all of our stuff. And this was like clothes and sleeping bags, not very well packaged because we've been living out of a van. And they hike it all the way across town. They take a bus for a while, but this garage is all the way on the other side of Toronto. So they're like hiking the streets with all my crap too, just all of this stuff. They get to the garage and they're like, we're here to pick up our van. They're like, no, it's not ready. And the bass and drum player are like, but it has to be ready because now we have nowhere to go. We're homeless. And they're like, could we just stay in the van in the garage? The guy's like, no, you're crazy. So now they're at a loss of what to do. They have the list of names and phone numbers from Klez Camp. So they're like, cool, could we use your phone? Because none of us have cell phones. And they're like, okay, you can use our phone. So they pick up the phone, call the first number. Hi, you don't know me, but we were just at this Klezmer festival and we're kind of in a bind. Who the heck are you? No way. Hang up. So they go through about 10 of these, and finally, a middle-aged Jewish lady says, oh my God, let me help you. I'm so sorry. We'll come pick you up right away. Or they somehow get to their house. And so they finally take this car trip all the way across town to these people's house. They walk in. They're exhausted. They've been hiking all day. They forget about their hapless fiddle player who's sitting on the street all the way across town, no idea what's going on. They're like, hey, do you want some food? Do you want some wine? Like, yes, food, wine. Oh, thank God. It's 2 courses in. They're like, oh, yeah, we forgot about Cassia. I guess we should go get her. So they get in the car and go get me. And, yeah, thanks a lot to that Jewish lady for saving us. No climactic ending. Thanks.
And thanks a lot to your friends for forgetting you. All right, so I see a couple of new faces, just in case. This is The Conk. It's storytelling, 5 minutes or less, by any of you, any audience member, on a theme, and this month's theme is thanks a lot. Is there anyone who would like to tell a story of a time when they said thanks a lot?
Thanks, Nally. You rock. Hey, my name's Gracie, and I'm thankful for a lot of things. I'm thankful I get to live in my hometown. I'm thankful for all my friends. I'm thankful that most people are thankful the same way I'm thankful. But most of all, I'm thankful for my husband, Mike. It's his birthday today. And I couldn't do any of this without him. I thought I could, but I can't. So I love him every day, and I'm so happy he's here with me, and he's an amazing person. You should all get to know him. Happy birthday, Mike.
Thanks for sharing your birthday with us. Aww. Justine?
All right. Okay, no problem. Okay, I'd like to say thanks a lot because I'm telling the story I didn't get to tell last month. So thank you for forgiving me in advance. So essentially, this is a story about a summer camp ghost named John Djibouti. As you can tell, last month was Halloween. So I'm a little bit off on my timing here, but that's okay. And I think you can tell by the name John Djibouti, this was not a white bread, like suburban summer camp. This was a summer camp for inner city children. And this was a long time ago. And I lived in the most white bread community on the planet in Stowe, Ohio. So this was quite an eye opener for me. And I was literally, for the first time in my life, a minority. But this was something I repeated over and over again when I lived in Korea and other places. So it's something I got quite used to. This was a long time ago. So this story involves a lot of irresponsibility. So if you're the judgmental type, you might want to just keep it to yourself. So anyway, essentially what he had was a group of camp counselors who were not only sick of this children, which happens really, really quickly when you live with them for a week, day in and day out, but we were also rather sick of the camp itself. The whole point of the camp was it was all for, you know, kids who couldn't have a camp experience otherwise, which is really quite noble. And I don't mean that in an ironic or sarcastic way. It was really quite noble, and I hope they're still doing it. The counselors, however, were not screened for nobility. So we really enjoyed telling the kids the stories of John Djibouti, but we built it up all week long, you know, and we would tell them, I'm sorry, do you have a question? I saw a hand up, you know, and my being a teacher, I immediately assumed she had a question. Sorry about that. If you could refrain from raising your hands or judging me, I would be really happy. So anyhow, I'm already out of my 5 minutes, so I'm going to have to sit down now. Sorry. Too much stick, not enough story. We had built up this John Djibouti all week long, and the time we tell this story for real is when we go out into the woods with the kids, and they sleep in tents. But we had decided, three camp counselors, me, another one of the camp counselors, and actually, for some reason, the janitor was in on this. I don't know why. And the janitor had what could only be described as like really killer ghetto pot. And which additionally, by the way, that just amps up the irresponsibility because we're supposed to be in charge of these children all night in the woods. And the responsible adults are stoned and plotting against them. So the big idea is that we're going to go out in the woods because I think the guy's name was Doc, I don't remember. He wanted to dress up as a mummy and jump up out of the ground at the climax of the story. So we were digging a grave for this poor guy to lie in. And as you may notice by looking at me, I'm not a grave digger. This is not really something I'm exceptionally good at. It was a very shallow grave. None of us were grave diggers. So we dug this grave and we put Doc in it, and you know, we put like a shroud over his face so he could breathe through it while the ground was like all on top of him. And so he waited there forever, underground, forever. It took forever for, you know, everything runs late at camp. We really hadn't planned on this. But I do remember as, you know, we're waiting and I'm throwing the dirt on him, I'm thinking, I kept saying, this is like an Edgar Allan Poe story. This is like an Edgar Allan Poe story. And Doc's laying there going, shut up, shut up, shut up. You're burying me alive. Shut up, you're freaking me out. So we finally get him completely buried under the ground, and the kids all come out, and there's 100 of them. They're amped out, right? And we have them all gathered around, but the camp counselors kind of stood behind them in something of a ring, a sort of a half-assed ring, as it turns out, in the middle of the woods. So we tell the story of John Djibouti, which oddly I don't remember because it's not as interesting as all the rambling that goes on around the story. And at the end of the story, you know, Doc is supposed to jump up out of the ground and scare the crap out of the children. Well, Doc had been laying in the ground for about an hour. And when it came time, he thrust a hand out and the children were screaming, which was Well, it was really funny to me then, but now I'm really disgusted. I'm absolutely disgusted that, you know, these people did this. Anyway, it's really bad karma. And then Doc jumped up out of the grave and started to run, but his legs had fallen asleep, both of them. And right in front of the children, he face planted in the dirt, dressed as a mummy. At this moment, 100 inner city children start screaming, pissing and crapping themselves, literally, and tear off in 360 degrees into the forest. They're gone. There's no sign of these kids, but you can smell them. So, you know, we were able, I know what fear smells like, and it smells a lot like a turnpike bathroom. So we do actually manage, Doc manages to get to his onto his feet, and he runs out into the woods, you know, to escape. And we have to now gather up 100 terrified, piss pants poopy children who are all over the forest. And we get them all back, and this is quite an effort to get these kids back. But we had all forgotten, once we got them back, that there was another element of chaos to this. As soon as we got the kids all back together, the maintenance man was in the woods with a chainsaw. And of course, he just gets this chainsaw ripping, and 100 inner city children piss themselves, crap themselves, and run 360 degrees into the forest once again. And they're just completely gone. And so we gather them all up again. And again, I just want to say thanks a lot for letting me tell you this story from last month.
Thanks so much for sharing that story from last month. I didn't know I was missing out so much at the last conch. Yeah, it was missing your story. That's what it was missing. So thanks a lot, y'all. Any other stories where you might have muttered or proclaimed, thanks a lot? All right, I'll take this moment to also mention that I'm stumbling over words tonight. Thanks for bearing with me. I'll take this moment to mention that Grow Radio and also the Conch have their own Facebook pages. So if you haven't liked them, please do. We'll keep you updated with the next month's Conch themes and also when the podcast goes online. So great information via those things. Grow Radio also has a Twitter, so.
I have a radio show on Mondays from 1 to 3, just so you know, on growradio.org and barefootjustine.com. That was shameless, sorry.
No sorries here, only thanks. All right, so in those moments, did anyone muster up some courage so I can tell you thanks a lot? Yeah? I think Bill might want to answer that one.
The secret. If you've read Lord of the Flies, you know in that book, you're only allowed to speak at the circle when you have the conch in your hands. That's where it came from. And it is, a Key Wester's here. They know how to pronounce it. It's conch, like C-O-N-K.
All right, somebody save me. Man.
I wasn't going to tell a story tonight, so this is unprepared, but it's deeply ingrained. For those of you who know me, you probably know I had a close call this summer in the hospital. I was in the hospital for a month. Had a abscess in my leg that got infected with staph and went septic and almost took me out of the game. So first of all, I'm thankful to be here. And with this theme, I've been thinking about just every little thing you can be thankful for. It seems like every step of the day there's something to be thankful for. And so I couldn't begin to thank everyone that was involved in that month with me. But I did have a crew of four people, who one of whom's here tonight, I owe my life to. And Tia, John, Rain, and Rick were my backstop the whole time I was there. And they're really the only reason I got treated properly. But I'm not going to go into all the details of that. The first week, I was up for 7 days straight, hallucinating out of my mind. Couldn't be sedated. They tried every drug they had and finally put me down with a drug called Haldol, which my nurse Jeff said that he was a nurse in the psych ward in prison. So that's the drug they would give to the really violent offenders who couldn't be subdued. And he said usually about halfway down the plunger, they'd be out. And he said it took them the plunger and then about 25, 30 minutes to get me to stop fighting and wanting to just resist everything they were trying to do to me. But the thing, well, like I said, there's so many things to be thankful for. But this one thing, which was the most sort of visceral thing I was thankful for while I was there, was I think I'd been in the hospital for about 4 days. I hadn't had surgery yet, but I was still kind of swimming in these hallucinations, which were the ones that I remember and remember quite vividly, and they were my reality. I don't really remember what was happening to me there. They were mostly nightmares. They were the most horrible, kind of paranoid, terrifying, seven layers of hell kind of nightmare hallucinations you can imagine. So I was in this constant state of panic, despair, not really knowing where I was going or what was happening. And like I said, I think it was the third, fourth, fifth day, something like that. And I was probably not smelling too good. I think I was, you know, just not in control of anything while I was there. I was all out of sorts. And I think maybe I'd had a sponge bath while I was there, but the sponge bath I'm about to tell you about was one of the most miraculous things that's ever happened to me in my life. I was on some gurney in North Florida Regional Hospital on the fifth floor, and I just kind of felt like they were just shuffling me around between intensive care and other areas of the hospital, and I really didn't know where I was or what was happening to me. But I was told I was going to get this bath, and I was really confused, because I was in this gurney and all I had on was a gown. And I said, how are you going to bathe me like this? There's water's going to go everywhere. It's going to be messy. And they said, oh, well, this person, I wish I could remember her name. She was a Lebanese woman. And she was like someone who's a genie sent her. She, she just said to me, we're going to give you a bath now. And I hit her with the questions and she said, don't worry, everything is going to be fine. And I sat there, and my mom was with me, and she was saying, it's going to be fine. And all of a sudden, this woman had a little basin with warm and soapy water in it and a towel. And she took this big bath towel, soaked the whole thing in this basin, and put it on top of my head and squeezed.
Water just came all down my body like this, into the bed and all down the floor.
And so part of me, my Type A side was appalled that they were letting all this mess go everywhere, but at the same time, the most beautiful, lemony, fresh-scented, warm, soothing, comforting water just was pouring all down my body and in my hair and in my eyes and on my legs and down through my toes, and I just was feeling it with every cell of my body, and it was so rejuvenating. Sorry, I'm still having leg problems. It was so restorative. It was like the one thing that had happened to me since I'd been there that felt normal and felt real and felt good and kind and everything that I wasn't feeling in this hospital. And so that, in that moment, was pure gratitude. And, you know, I'm saying it to her now because I don't know how to thank her any other way. But thank you for helping pulling me back into the reality of that moment. And, you know, over the course of the next few days, I had an operation and everything took care of itself. And a month later, I was out of the hospital. And here I am to talk to you tonight. So thanks a lot.
Thank you, Bill. All right. Oh. I got really excited. I was like, I didn't even have to ask. I thought I'd keep going with that, not asking. See if anybody just volunteered. No? Try two, Jordan? No?
You know, that's a hard act to follow right there.
It's true. That's a really hard act to follow. And my name's Jordan, by the way. It's really good. It's really good that you're still with us. And thanks a lot, buddy, for doing that. And I was going to get up here and talk about how I hate, and I do, I still do. I hate when you sit around the Thanksgiving table and someone goes, "Oh, we should tell what we're thankful for." Oh my gosh. It is awful. Ever since I was a small child, this was something that was sort of thrust upon me. I had to say something. And my parents were kind of smart about things, and they knew you can't just say, "Oh, I'm thankful for family and stuff." Like, they really wanted some meat to it. But you can't be forced to be thankful for anything. I mean, that just doesn't work. And it was just awful. But I'm not going to really get too into that because everybody's been just telling such really nice stories. And I feel motivated to tell kind of a short story about something that I'm really thankful for. And that is the safety features on our former Toyota Tacoma pickup truck. They are, you know, they're amazing. And it was like a 94, but they're amazing. My wife got into an accident, and I'll tell you all about it. But I mean, 50 years ago, 20 years ago, like, she'd be dead. Straight up, you know, that'd be the end of that. But she rear-ended somebody. It was her fault, unfortunately. She just wasn't paying attention for just, you know, all it takes is a second. And she wasn't texting, though, mind you. So you can put your, you can be thankful, you know, we don't even own a cell phone, so that's good. But anyway, it was just a moment of inattention to what was straight ahead of her, and all of a sudden there's this big, like, Ford 450, you know, some monstrous vehicle that should not really even, it should have wide load on the side of it, you know? These things are really big now. And she goes right back into the back of it at 50 miles an hour, and it must have pulled out in front of her. I wasn't there. I was not in the car. I just got the phone call. That was full of tears and shock. And then, boy, did I drive fast to go find her. And when I got to where she was, or where she was supposed to be, there was just a tow truck, and I saw my car. And we love this little Tacoma car, this little, you know, and I'm not, this is not a commercial, by the way. I am not, you know, any car that is made well should function this way with airbags and seatbelts and things like that. But the whole front is crumpled. There's like guts are leaking out of the bottom of it. And I see this. And when my wife had called me, she told me on the phone, you know, I'm okay. You know, I could tell by her voice that she was shaken for sure. And who knows, you know? I mean, who knows? She was in shock. And so I just came onto the scene and I saw this car. And she said, I'm not going to go to the hospital. I'll be here. But then she wasn't there. And there was some gawker guy. And I asked him, hey, do you know where my, you know, do you know what happened here? And he's like, oh no, I try not to get involved. And man, I could have punched him. That was no good. But a police officer pulled up shortly and told me she had gone to the hospital, and I had to go find the hospital and everything like that, which was also, I stopped at two convenience stores, neither of which the clerks behind the counter knew where their own hospital was. This was the town of Stark. There's just the one hospital there, and they could not direct me to it. Like, is that weird? That should be weird. That should not be okay. But anyway, that's you know, that's what was there. And so I found it on my own, which is good. Now wishing I had a cell phone with one of those little things that you could just talk to and it'll tell you where to go and everything. But I might have gotten in an accident trying to do that while driving around freaking out about my wife. Who knows? But safely driving, I got to the ER, and she was fine. They just wanted to give her some x-rays because they also saw what happened to my car, and she was okay. And they said, well, let's be sure. And so anyway, I am thankful for the safety features on the 94 Toyota Tacoma.
Thanks, Jordan. Jordan is your bartender this evening, along with Brianne. Treat them kindly. Thank them lots. All right. I know y'all are thankful for something. Come tell me. Me too, man. It was delicious. Is yours all right so far? Good. We've got another awkward hour up here. All right.
Hello, everybody. My name is Joe, and I'm thankful for a whole lot of stuff. I'm thankful that I live in Gainesville. I'm thankful to what I've been able to do while here in Gainesville. I arrived in 1975. Those that don't know, I published Gainesville Iguana, a little newspaper. I've been involved in Civic Media Center. But how'd I get here? Well, it goes back. Before 1975, I worked a construction site out in Colorado. And while on that construction site, I had one of the people on the crew I was on moved to Gainesville, Florida. And I came and visited, kind of liked the town, liked what I saw. I did one of those 15-day Greyhound passes. So I did 2.5 days going across the country, landed in Gainesville, had about 9 days here, and then 2.5 days back to Colorado again. Enjoyed it a lot. My first trip to Devil's Millhopper, we'd had some, let's see, how did it go? It was some strange tea that was made down here that I didn't know anything about, something to do with mushrooms. And we went out for a walk out by the Millhopper, and I saw this lizard, this big copper-colored lizard on the ground. It was my first encounter with one of those big skinks. And I'm looking at it. And my friend I was with goes, yeah, they're all over the place, and just kicks them. I'm like, ah, what are you doing? So I liked Gainesville. I liked it when I got here. I found good things here. But how did I get to Gainesville? Well, I graduated college in 1973 and needed something to do. I wasn't going to stay in Holland, Michigan. I wasn't going to go back to New Jersey. So there's the map. And I had some friends in Boulder, Colorado, so I went out there to kind of check that out. And I didn't like Boulder that much. It was just kind of busy. But I looked on the map, and there's this little town south of there called Golden, Colorado, where the Coors Brewery is. And also, I figured, well, I'll give it a shot. So I drove down in the morning. I knew there was a newspaper that came out on that Thursday. So I got down in the morning and found out it was an afternoon newspaper. So that left me with about 4 hours to kill. So I was just kind of driving around and looking at things. And I picked up a guy hitchhiking. And I said, where are you going? I'm just killing time. So I told him I'd take him to his place. So we were driving down the road, and he pointed out this construction site. And he said, hey, they hire a lot of long hairs there. At the time, my hair was way long. So I drove him to where he was and dropped him off and drove back down to the job site and walked in. And this guy interviewed me, and I wasn't particularly qualified. I'd worked as a house painter in the summer, but I'd really never worked on a big construction job, and I never would have had nerve enough to go and apply for a job there. I had no idea what I was going to do with my life. I was a psychology, sociology draft debater, so I didn't have a lot of qualifications for it. I had worked as a house painter over the summer. So anyway, I walk in, and this guy, I interview, and he says, oh, well, we have a shortage. You can start on Monday if you'd like. I went back to that guy's trailer, shared a smoke with him, and I said, thanks a lot. And I had no idea how much I was thanking him for, but if I hadn't picked him up, I never would have applied at that job site. I never would have met my friend who moved to Gainesville. I never would have ended up in Gainesville. So I couldn't thank him any more than I can right now, and I wish I knew where he was. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Sorry. Everybody just has such like great heartwarming stories this month. I don't know what to say after them. Or, you know, heartfelt, heartwarming, all of the above. So anyway, who wants to make me speechless next? Are you sure you don't? If you tell them after this is over. Okay. All right. There are so many people here tonight. Thanks for coming out, y'all, and thanks for listening and being so attentive and sharing parts of your lives. That's my thanks a lot for right now. And I will be so ever thankful for the next person who shares their story of their thanks. Oh, I see a hand in the back.
Good evening. My name's James. I'm a newcomer to Gainesville. My brother and his family used to always come down to Cocoa Beach, where I lived, for Thanksgiving. And I lived on the water. It was really nice. We had a boathouse, and the kids would get up on the roof and jump, and we'd have a blast. And so my brother and I are out on the dock, and we're fishing one morning, and we've got a bucket full of live shrimp. And my daughter's about 3 years old at the time, and she's got tiny little hands and little fingers. And so we let her get the shrimp. We needed a shrimp, live shrimp, because they wouldn't mess with her. If I put my big hand in there, they'd spear me and give me a hard time. So she was having a great time giving us the shrimp, and we're fishing and having a good time. And then I hear this splash, and I'm kind of a go-to guy. I mean, I'm adventurous and, you know, you need a hand, I'll help you out kind of guy. I hear this splash, I look down, and there's my daughter looking at me underwater, right? And I totally froze. And so immediately my brother goes in, you know, cell phone, wallet, everything, pulls her out. But I'm thinking this lasted like half an hour, you know, but it's probably 2 seconds. And so I'm very happy to my brother John.
Thank you. Whoa, that got loud. All right, I saw another hand way in the back. Still want to share? Great. Thanks. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Okay. Hi, I'm Sam. So my story kind of centers around last year, 2012, January 1st. I decided to basically F the whole entire living in an apartment, paying rent. Kind of just like do your own thing, be independent. So what better way to do it than be in Gainesville and move out to the woods? So I moved out to the woods, which was very like sketchy and scary, and you know, I've traveled, hopped trains and all that's all cool, but like when you stay in one place and you're around these same people who are just trying to survive, it's kind of can be nerve-wracking at times. So I was thinking of like ways to better it, like how can you be in a situation and better it. So I would do little things. I made an amphitheater out there in the woods. Basically, if you go down Southwest 16th and you meet up at Williston, there's a like a creek that goes back there. It's Sweetwater Branch. And I stayed out there, and I would get to talking to the people out there. I would buy beer. And, you know, I had a job, so it's like, all right, hey, I'll buy you guys beers. Love to hear their stories. They had some amazing stories. Like, you know, some is made up, obviously, but then the others were just, like, would blow me away. So I was like, all right, what can I do? Had the amphitheater going out there. Would have bands come from out of town, out of country, would come out there and play. And the one thing that really brought people together out there was music. I mean, it really just like had a guy out there who did a lot of crack. And whenever the bands were playing, like he didn't do drugs. He didn't need anything like that. He was like, I really feel positive. There's so much like positivity coming out from what you're doing. It's like, awesome. Please don't steal from my tent. And so it's like Thanksgiving's coming around. It's like, I want to do something awesome. It's like, I had a couple bands coming in. It's like, all right. I want to get food, but it's like, all right, I have my money, and they're like, oh, what am I going to do? It's like, all right, there's dumpstering, which is always fun. And so I was like, all right, we'll go to Trader Joe's, the beautiful Kay back there. She accompanied me, and we got there and, you know, dumpster before, got food and cook it up. It's awesome. And we're in there. We got all this meat, and we're just like really like so super excited. We're like, oh, man, I had this big, I mean, it must have been like a 20-pound turkey, and we're like holding it up like champs. We're like, whoa, the turkey. And obviously the manager from Trader Joe's comes out and says, you can't take this food. And I was like, well, I'm feeding the homeless. I'm actually doing something good with it. He's like, well, we already donate to the homeless. So I was like, okay, all right, we'll put it back. You know, I don't want to go to jail for taking food from your dumpster. So as I'm putting the food in, Kay goes to the car and sits in there. I get back in, I was like, well, I guess that was a loss. She was like, go get that turkey. And I was like, but baby, you know, I don't know. And it's like, go get that turkey. So being like any guy who goes home with his girlfriend, you're going to go get that turkey. You're going to get it. So I wanted to like thank her, Kay, for that. Which was a follow-up. There's like, and thank you, Trader Joe's, for being so nice to throw it out there for me. Went back there. It's like, all right, well, Christmas is coming up, and I'm going to get this, but I'm going to be sneaky this time. You know, I'm going to be like, and they got this lock. And if you've ever been behind Trader Joe's, that fence is about 20 feet high. And they had that thing locked, and I'm looking at it. I'm like, I got this. You know, I'm 6'3". I got long legs and arms. It caught me on the other side as I'm coming down. My pants are ripping like there. I'm hanging from the fence. I'm like, Christmas dinner for the homeless. Christmas dinner for the homeless. This is worth it. And lo and behold, it had everything from tofu, turkey, and hams. I got it all out. I had an amazing set of friends there. And we were just doing this relay toss thing. And once again, thanks a lot, Trader Joe's. thanks a lot to my wonderful friends who are there to support me in such things and doing it. And yeah, so that's my thanks a lot. So.
Thanks, Sam. And thanks, Kay, for that little bit of encouragement that he needed. All right, y'all. I know there are still some good stories to hear. I don't want you to keep them to yourself. I'm greedy. Yeah? Awesome.
Thank you. Introduce yourself. Hi, my name's Ryan. I live in Gainesville. I live right close to here. This is the closest bar to my house, so God bless him for that. I wanted to share this because of Grow Radio, because the radio has been a really important part of my life in the last couple of years. From 2009 to June of this year, I've been in prison. I was locked up most of the time down in Miami.
and I am unbelievably thankful for NPR. Because without that, it would have been me and the Miami Evening News hearing 2 hours a day about a man eating another man's face under a bridge. Or I could have listened to inmate.com and heard every little story about every little baby mama drama that they got in their own little private episode of Maury Povich every day of their lives. So I listened to the radio, and I listened to NPR, and I listened to the University of Miami student station, and I listened to the FIU student station all day, every day. They give you a little purse. Well, they don't give it to you. You have to buy it. The state of Florida doesn't give you much. They barely feed you. And you get a little pocket radio, you got your little headphones on. And so you're listening to, you know, all the new indie bands. They have hip hop night on FIU. And it just, you know, it made that time so much more encouraging. It told me that like, there's still this whole world out there. You know, nothing stopped, nothing changed, and it's right out there waiting for me. And I'm even more on top of the news. I'm writing letters to my friends about what's going on out there, and they don't even know. And we would smoke weed in prison too. I don't know if you know that, they do. So on Friday night, on the University of Miami student station, I mean, it's Miami. What happens after 11 in Miami? So I'm vibing out on my bottom bunk. I got my headphones on, I'm laying back and I'm listening to all the club music and I'm thinking about, man, this is almost over. This is gonna be all right. Gainesville's waiting for me and the rest of the world's waiting for me and I'm just gonna step right back in right where I got left off, thanks to NPR.
Thanks, Ryan. All right, we haven't quite closed in on the night yet. I see some finger pointing. Fred. I know he's thankful for his pizza, but I'm sure he's got another story up his sleeve. 8:40, you're gonna close out the night? All right. I can only push so hard. I'm gonna tell you my secret. If I stand up here long enough, somebody feels bad for me. Who's that gonna be? Huh? I don't know if I've got good puppy dog eyes. Let's. Woohoo! I knew it'd work.
I guess I felt a little bad. But Ivor, by the way, I'm another Gainesville resident almost my entire life. I moved here as soon as I could. I was one. But I felt tonight a little bit like an NPR listener who doesn't contribute. You know, like I'm not making anybody feel guilty here. That's not my goal. But I just want to tell you that I have a very brief story that's about being thankful. It's really not about making those who aren't telling stories feel bad. So recently, I do a lot of woodworking. During a period of my life, I actually was a carpenter. I did a lot of that. I don't do that anymore, but I still love to build things. And a table saw is like an essential part of doing woodworking. And table saws are super dangerous, for those of you who don't know. And And so recently I nearly cut my finger off. And it was the first time I'd ever had like a serious woodworking injury, even though I'd done it for years. And, you know, it was just one of those things where you're kind of not being careful. And sure enough, the worst case scenario happens. And so I nearly cut my finger off, and I tried not to freak out. And I'm like, okay, this is really disgusting. I can't believe I did this to myself. And I was just very frustrated with the whole situation, just almost angry, because I thought to myself, and this is going to sound terribly vain, but I was like, I'm going to be one of those guys with four fingers. So I wrapped up my hand and I went to the ER, and on the way there, I didn't even think about the idea that, well, hey, you know, sometimes when you do something like this to yourself, you're in a lot of pain and you might go into shock, and it might not be a good idea to be driving a vehicle. And that's what happened. So I'm about halfway to the ER and like everything starts turning white, and I'm just thinking, this is not good. But I made it, and ran a couple of red lights, got to the ER, and pull up, and they have valet parking now. It's awesome. Okay, so another little disgusting thing you don't know about table saws: when you cut your hand really bad, that stuff, it ends up on you. Okay, so I'm walking up, I have this shirt that has all this like blood and little bits and pieces of hand, and it gives you a lot of like street cred, you know. So I look at the valet guy, I have my hand wrapped up, and I have all this blood on my shirt, and I just give him the keys, and he's like, cool. So I run inside, I look around, and the place is completely full of people, and I'm thinking, oh God, this is terrible. Again, I'm gonna lose the tip of my finger because I'm gonna be waiting all evening in the ER. And so I walk up, and thankfully the shirt really works out for me again. So they whisk me right into the back, and this is pretty much where the story ends. It all worked out well. But the thing to mention is, until that moment, I had always had this really bad kind of negative association with medicine, because, you know, most of my experiences going to the ER, dealing with doctors, was like coming back from, you know, with tropical diseases from Central American countries, and they just never could figure stuff out, and I would suffer, and I felt like they weren't trying to figure it out, or they didn't care. But this was a situation where like everybody was awesome. They were like, they took great care of me. They told me exactly what to do to keep my hand from getting infected. I mean, it was like great service for once, and I just thought, wow, this is awesome. And so on many occasions, going to see the surgeon, revisiting, I was like very thankful, and I told many people, thanks a lot. So anyway, that's my story.
Thanks for sharing, and I'm glad that you still have five fingers.
Yeah. Five more comes up here, I guess. All right, so my name is Adam, and Ivor's the last person I would expect to cut himself on anything, so I was impressed. I've not heard that whole story before. That's a great story, but mine is a little bit less life-threatening of a story. I was camping in northeastern Japan in the island of Hokkaido, and there's a great park called Shirotoko Peninsula, a great place for bird watching, Japanese cranes, and lots of birds up there. But I had to get back to my English teaching job in Hokkaido. So it's a long ways. I got up at 5 in the morning. I figured anybody driving by at this time of day is going to pick me up. Japan, by the way, is about the best place in the world for hitchhiking. You get rides anywhere, great rides, and it's very safe. Not a lot of really, really drunk people, which is most other places where I've hitchhiked. So I'm standing there, 5 in the morning. Here comes a car, 100-something miles an hour, zooming along, goes right by me, keeps on going. I'm thinking, wow, I wonder if they even saw me. Well, I'm pretty obvious here. They must have seen me. It would have got to the destination faster if they picked me up. But they're down a couple miles away in the top of a hill. I see the brake lights go on in the car. I'm thinking, oh, either they're going to turn around for me, or they didn't want to run over a little animal, which is less likely. So the brake lights come on, they start going backwards, only maybe 70 miles an hour this time. For about 2 miles, they're backwards, and they stop, and they say, something like, where are you going? Or that's what I assume they said. And so we got in the car, and they take off again. And we're having our limited conversation in Japanese. I think Japanese is the easiest language to speak poorly, and it's pronounced a lot like Spanish, and it's spelled like it's pronounced. So, with a basic little dictionary, you can understand a lot. So I asked them what they did. They sell cars. We're talking about this and that, basic conversation. Hey, sushi, great, yum, isn't it? All right, okay, there we go, next subject. They try to teach me a song. It turns out it's a sumo wrestling song. I couldn't understand a word. It wasn't in the dictionary, not one word from that song. So instead they teach me a children's song, and I can still remember that song today. It's Konikocha, Konikocha, Anata no uchi wa doko desu ka? It means little kitten, where's your home? So, we're driving along some more, and we're getting along great, sushi, great, Japan, awesome, people very friendly, all right. And so I decide I'll ask them a little bit more about their job, and, tell me more about what you do. One guy's asleep by then. I think the children's song put him to sleep. And the guy, it's the driver who's still awake. He says, when I asked him what he does, he said, ma pi a. And I'm thinking, oh, chotto mate. I got it. Just a second. That's a short word. I can look it up in the dictionary. It's not in the dictionary. Ask him to repeat it. Ma pi a. And he's kind of laughing. I'm like, no, I think I've got it. It's not in there. And he's still laughing. And then he says, Japan, mafia, yakuza. And that means mafia in Japanese. And he's laughing. He rolls up his friend's sleeve and is tattooed from his wrist all the way up, just like every spot of his arm. So that's a typical Japanese mafia thing. So, what do you say next? Killed anybody lately or something? Hey, sushi, great, huh? We keep on driving, and I don't remember any of the conversation after that, I have to admit, but talking about whatever, and we get to the point where they go one way, I'm going the other way. There's a little gas station in Japan that's all over the place. It's called Lawson's. It's kind of like a 7-Eleven or Jiffy Mart here. So they pull over, they drop me off there, and then they go and, just a minute, they run inside, they buy me all kinds of food and drinks and stuff like that. And then they've got some change left over in a coin in Japan. One coin it can be $5 or so. So they put like $15 into this little change box by the cash register. And then they say goodbye and they take off one way. And I'm sitting there loaded down with food, got my new Japanese children's song. And I just noticed that what they put all their extra change into was a environmental charity. Why it had some trees on it. And I asked the woman who worked at the store, what's that money for? And she said, it's an environmental something or other. So I just want to say thank you to the Japanese mafia for teaching me a children's song, buying me a great lunch, and donating money to an environmental charity. Domo arigato.
Thanks so much. I've been watching The Sopranos for the first time recently, and I'm just amazed that they didn't even have a pseudonym like, Japanese waste management. Just straightforward. I was hoping so.
But I'll stop by here
first. Thank you.
What's your name?
Natalie.
Thank you, Natalie. I want to thank Natalie for being so nice at school to me when she's giving me change for the things that I buy that I shouldn't be, because I'm supposed to be saving my money. I want to thank my new fellow classmates for inviting me out here tonight. Because this place is weird. But I like weird. Because I'm weird. I don't know how weird I am, but I'm learning more and more every day that it gets weirder every day. I don't know why I'm talking like this, because I really don't talk like this. It must be the conch. So my name is Ariel. They say, oh, I hear the ocean. So I want to thank the ocean for this beautiful moment. It's very nice. Wow, that. But I don't know if I probably have a million stories, but I just think everyone's stories were profound, and I'm just really thankful for my life. I'm thankful for another day, and I wasn't going to get up here because but I thought, I'm going to the bathroom, and then I thought, you know. I'm going to get off the stage soon. So I really would be presumptuous of me to think that I have tomorrow. So thank you for this day. Thank you, Natalie.
And thank you. All right. I guess this, I don't think we have any new faces, but this is the Conk. Oh, there are a couple new faces back there. Hi, y'all. They know what this is, though. This is the Conk. It's true storytelling. 5 minutes or less on a theme, and this month's theme is thanks a lot. Open to your interpretation, as always. No thanks? Oh, you got a thanks.
Who doesn't have a thanks? My name is Danielle, and I've been in Gainesville for like 2 years. I study at Dragon Rises. I study acupuncture. So my story starts about, maybe like 3 years ago, let's say. I was living in Spain at the time, teaching English as a second language as well. And I read my first transformational self-help personal development book. And I'm like, wow, this is pretty cool stuff. And then soon after that, I moved back to the United States and I started reading all these books. And then I started studying acupuncture down in Miami. And I started doing Qigong and Tai Chi. And I'm like, yeah, I've got this spirituality stuff down pat. And meanwhile, my brother's going through a divorce and he's doing something. And at that point, I had no idea what he was doing, but I knew he was doing something that was really helping him because I saw the change in him, which is like the transformation in him. At that time, I really didn't know it was transformation. And right before that, I had gone to Canada to a friend's wedding. And my friend has 3 older sisters. And there were times where, the younger sister was getting married, and they were so loving, and they loved each other, and they were the best of friends. And I've got a younger sister, and I didn't have that relationship. I've never had that relationship with my sister. And at that time, I'm like, oh, do I want to have that? Have I always wanted that with my sister? Do I want to have that with my sister? That was that. Came back, and my brother calls me up, and he's like, so seeing him go through this transformation, he's going through a divorce. He's kind of in a not so great place, and I think I'm in this great spiritual place. And I'm really happy for him, but I really have no interest in doing what he's doing. I don't even know what it's about. And he calls me up and he's like, Danielle, guess what? He's like, I signed you up for the gratitude trainings and you're coming down in 2 weeks. And I'm like, damn. He's like, I got a free ticket and I chose you. And I'm like, what does that mean? And I'm here in Gainesville. I'm new to Gainesville. I'm really liking my life here in Gainesville. I'm studying. I want to study. I don't want to go down to Palm Beach and take time away from studying or stuff here that I do in Gainesville. And then after that, he's like, and guess what? Your sister's going too. And I'm like, so for the first time, I think I'm getting at that point that I'm going to have to show my vulnerability in front of my sister. Like, you know, like I've always been like the older sister, you know, like nothing, you know, you can't, you know, touch me, you can't hurt me, or I'm always okay. And growing up, and I've kind of held on my shoulders for a really long time that I wasn't the greatest older sister. And my sister was a little brat, that's first and foremost. And and my parents were wonderful, wonderful parents, but they never really taught us the importance of family, right? They were great providers, but I had no idea that I was treating my little sister like shit, and not really, I wasn't showing her love in any way. And I've been holding that on my shoulders for all my life. And I knew, I kind of had this feeling that I was going to confront that in the training and have to apologize to her, and that's the last thing I wanted to do. Because I'm the cool, can't touch me older sister. And so we go there, and I'm like trembling. All my nerves are going to my digestion. I'm running in and out of the bathroom. And I'm like, why am I so nervous? I didn't get it. And I realize it's because I'm about to break through something that has been holding me back for all my life. I didn't realize that then, but I get that now. And it was absolutely amazing. For the first time, so it's a program Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday. And I didn't say anything on Thursday night. I went home practically in tears on Friday night, seeing how I showed up in the world. And I thought I was doing something good for my sister on Friday night because we were on the same team playing a game, and I let her take control. I'm like, okay, this is my time to give back to my sister and show her that I care, and I'm just going to let her have everything and the stardom and everything. And then that really didn't work out. I walked out in tears. And on Saturday, for the first time, you go through different exercises in these programs, in these trainings, and for the first time, I looked into my sister's eyes and saw her and loved her and accepted her for who she is. The reason why we haven't gotten along all these years is because we're so different. I'm, in my family, kind of known as the free spirit, and she's really professional. She's financially abundant. She's like serious and really girly. And I just thought we were too different for it to matter. And for the first time, I realized that nothing matters, that none of that matters. And for the first time, so just to give you a little bit of background, my sister and I, we've hardly talked, especially when I lived in Spain. I lived there for 7 years. We hardly talked. I didn't know anything. Check this out. I wasn't even her maid of honor at her wedding, and I was okay with that. Her best friend was her maid of honor because I knew that I wasn't her best friend, and I didn't know much about her life. And but underneath it all, I knew that I always wanted her to be my best friend. And so for the first time in that training, I touched her hand and held her hand because I wanted to, because I chose to. And because I wanted to show her that I loved her, and that her being and her life and her relationship to me meant a lot. And then for the first time, I hugged her. Not because it was Christmas and we saw each other and, hey, Merry Christmas, and that was it, because we had to. It was because I wanted to. And by the end of the training, at the end of the training, you stand there, and I was holding my sister's. So real quick, there was a time when we were looking into each other's eyes, and we both started crying, realizing that we finally have what we've always wanted, and we just never had the balls to tell each other. And at the end of the training, I was standing next to her, holding her hand with my head on her shoulder, and it was the most amazing, she's a lot taller than I am, and it was the most amazing feeling that I've ever had in my life. And my parents came in, and my mother, she's super emotional, and she saw us, and she started bawling. And my brother, the one who signed us both up for the training was bawling, and everyone was bawling because we never, even though we had such a great family, we never had this connection, this love for each other. And so I'm super grateful for my brother for signing me up, even though I did not want to go at all. And I'm super grateful for Joe, the woman who created these gratitude trainings, to create this experience and this opportunity for us. And so one last story. It's not over, because after that, I knew that I needed to apologize to her for being the shitty older sister that I was. And I couldn't do it. Even going through the trainings, I'm like, I can't do it. I'm still the big, cool, older sister, and I can't do it. So in the car on the way home, we stopped at my brother's house. It was the last stop. She was dropping me off, and I'm like, Danielle, just do it. We finished the conversation. We talked about the whole weekend, and it was silent, and I was just like, and I was like, Suzanne, I have to tell you, and I'm like bawling, and I'm like, I'm so sorry for being the shittiest older sister that you could have possibly had. But, you know, I didn't know any better. I didn't know the importance of family. And she's it's so funny. She's like, but Danielle, I was the biggest brat. And I was just like, oh, my God. For years and years and years, I was holding on my shoulders that I was the shittiest older sister. And she's like, there's four of us, like we were all shitty to each other. And she's like, it's okay, because I was really a brat. I didn't know any better either. So it's okay. And so that's my story of gratitude. I'm so thankful that my sister and I are our best friends now. Yeah. And you know, I just want you to know that for anyone out there, if you guys ever have a relationship, doesn't have to be a family member or anyone in your life, there's hope. You know, you could really break through. And you don't have to do it by yourself. You know what I mean? There's people out there that can help. Okay?
You're welcome.
Thanks, Danielle. All right, I think we're closing in on that last 15 minutes. The man who said he'd tell his story at 8:45? No? All right. Yeah? All right.
Thanks. Hi, my name's Dave. I know it's time. Everybody's leaving. Before I start my thankful story here, do you guys know what this is? Do you know what? I thought it was a baseball cap, but recently someone told me it was a Southern toupee. So, anyway. But, anyway. I rolled with it. Anyway, my story is, we spent the, Lauren and I, which she's hiding in the back over there, not last summer, the summer before, we spent the whole summer out west, and we basically were camping. We camped for almost 2.5 months, and we were in Wyoming, Utah, and Idaho. And our excuse for being in the wilderness is climbing. We put the rope up and do our best to you know, just enjoy the day with a interesting tribe of people who do that. Anyway, part and parcel of the story, at the end of the summer, we had to head back east to a family reunion. And we're heading through South Dakota. And there are no mountains in South Dakota. It's pretty much monoculture. It's all corn. And our policy for the whole summer was pretty much to avoid driving at night. That pretty much you want to stay off the roads in the evenings. There's a lot of deer everywhere. And so things typically start to go wrong around dinner time driving in a car. So we typically stayed out of the, stayed off the highways. But this one time we were trying to get to a particular wildlife area where we thought we could camp. And we're driving along at 65 miles an hour in my truck, and the deer, the deer out west are quite different. You could put a saddle on them, okay? All right, here they look like dogs or pets, you know? It's sort of, you're not sure why people are shooting them, okay? Because you could adopt them here. But anyway, out there, there are mule deer. They're quite large. And we're driving along, and we're in the middle of nowhere. We came off, I think it was the Rosebud Indian Reservation. So it's very, these are dry areas. They don't sell alcohol, but on the edges of them, there's they'll have bars, typically. And we had just passed this literal sod roofed bar, okay? It was this shack. And we go by it, and within, I'd say, 2 minutes, this deer that it could have been an NFL linebacker, it came out of nowhere in a flash, and it came right in front of us, and it luckily for us, it was moving so fast that it vectored, it hit the car, and the radiator explodes. There's this shocking noise. If you've ever, I've never been in a car accident, but this was pretty good. This animal, it was sad for the animal. It hit the car and it vectored, lucky for us, not into the windshield, but hit the side post and then slid into its eternal home plate. The car, it was just amazing. I thought we were done. I thought it was completely done at that point. Our vacation was over. And we drifted off. I put in the clutch, and we drifted off to the side of the road. And somehow, miraculously, the engine's still running. And I'm thinking, well, we better get back to that sod bar because those folks will help us. And so we turned the car around and just, you know, thinking the engine's going to die anyway, go back about 2 miles, and we stop, turn the engine off. And the whole front of the car is caved in, the truck. And we go inside, and there's all these old farmers playing cards, you know. And it was a little strange because, you know, I don't think they saw a lot of people from other places, but they weren't real interested either in our little story. And I was thinking, well, we'll stay here the night. We'll just set up our tent around back. And at that point... Lauren interjected, and she started crying. and then I realized that as the sun's going down and we're at this sod house with a bunch of farmers playing cards and drinking heavily, and the Indians were coming to buy their 24 packs of Natty Light, it wasn't a heartwarming situation right there in general. And what we did was we tied one of our bike cables to the front of the truck and to a telephone pole, and I reversed it out, and we pulled the front end out of the engine, the whole radiator out of the engine. And then the radiator, it was only leaking from the top. So we just had jugs with us because we were living in remote places. We had 5 gallon jugs of water, and we just managed to decide. They told us 15 miles away was a town. And so the name of the town was Winner, South Dakota, okay? And I don't know if you folks have driven across the West, but what I can tell you right now is once you get to the Mississippi, get off the interstate. There is no point, okay? Because all these small towns, it's all corporate farming now. They've dried up. There are no people in them. They are removing the traffic lights on the two-lane roads. In Winter, the headline of the newspaper was the final traffic light was about to be removed by the state, and they were a little upset about it. Okay? So, yeah, when you drive across the country, just get on these secondary roads. They're fantastic. And so, anyway, so we managed... Shockingly, the fan's gone, but the engine's still running, and I had all my tools with me, and we get to this town, Winter, South Dakota, and we get to this hotel with the kind of burnout neon, typical, you know, just something out of the movies or something. And this widower was there, or this widow was there, and she took us in. Her son was living in one of the rooms. He kept peeking out. It was a little weird. But anyway, the thankfulness part that I've been boring you to tears, but the thankfulness part was there was a junkyard in that town where the guy, okay, the week before had advertised nationally. He was getting out of the business after like 40 years or some crazy number of years. He had collected all these cars, and he advertised nationally because he had a lot of older model cars, and he had sold everything out. His junkyard set in fields, this big field with trees, was completely cleaned out, except for there was a car identical to mine. Okay, where we were able to go in there with our tools, and he gave me a Southern toupee. He gave me a hat with his name on, you know, Wayne's Auto Yard, 1967 to, you know, whatever, 2012. We went to town. We took a bunch of parts. We took the hood. We took grill, all kinds of parts off of that car, and we got our car running. And then we went to the John Deere plant, or not plant. It was a dealership. Just right next door. This is all really odd, okay, to be in the middle of nowhere. And it was a Saturday, and it was such a big dealership, they had a radiator shop, a guy that did nothing but fix farmers' radiators on their tractors. And he glue gunned and fixed our radiator temporarily so we could drive 3 hours to Sioux City, South Dakota, and get a new radiator. So anyway, I was thankful for the good treatment of the people there and the strange circumstances of encountering this car that was identical to mine, several thousand miles in the interior of the country. So anyway, don't drive at night is basically my story.
Thanks, David. All right, if you've been holding out tonight to close out the night with your ringer of a story, now's your time. Yeah? Yeah, okay. Thanks a lot. You got one? All right.
I'm going to get sentimental because... that's what's on my mind right now, some pretty personal stuff. So this story is about my dad, and it's hard to talk about my dad in a really positive way because growing up, he was a very critical person. And as much as I really thought my dad was cool in a lot of ways, he was... I never really felt accepted by him so much. So I tried really hard to play, you know, an active role in a lot of the things we're interested in. And we're interested in basically all the same things. Gardening, music, self-sufficiency. I mean, across the board, and for the most part, we have some pretty... similar interest. And so so I've pursued music, and we've played a lot of music together, and that was tough, learning to play music with my dad, because he was a seasoned musician, and I started playing drums at the age of like 21 or something like that. So I'm like ready to get in and start playing drums and want to really have fun with it, and like going to go play with my dad, and we go in the garage to play, and I'm ready to just jam out, and here's my dad like just coming down on me hard with how to play drums and how to, if I'm going to play with him, it's got to be this way and all this stuff like that. So but in that experience, you know, I really enjoyed playing music with my dad, and he was quite a good musician and a good songwriter. And so basically, it's kind of a bittersweet relationship, you know. And another thing is, as I've kind of grown and matured somewhat, I've kind of had this idea that, like, I was going to fix him somehow. Because, like, I'd learn something really cool, like, and I'd think, oh, I could just teach that or use that on my parents. And then they'll, like, suddenly start, like, being cool and, like, we'll have a great family. And so that never really worked so much. I don't know if any of you guys have tried that, but it's good luck. So, you know, I just kind of started to realize, hey, man, I'm just going to live my own life. I have to define my own life. And so I've been pursuing that for a while. And things have been pretty good. But recently, my dad got really sick. And so a lot of the stuff of the disappointments and issues that I've had in my life with my father have come closer, you know, and more poignant. And I've had a lot of tough decisions to make in regards to, like, how do I deal with my dad being sick and the dynamic of the relationship, the family dynamic and things like that. And it's been a tough road to just find where that place is. And so, like, recently I just moved to Gainesville and started massage school, and that was a big transition for me and something I found really important and at the same time really hard to do, because my dad was very, very ill, and I was searched hard to figure out, you know, what role I could play and family affairs. And so I decided that what was most important to me was to start massage school. And about 2 weeks later, I saw my dad for the last time. And it's been an interesting process trying to stay focused on what's important to me and understand what my relationship to my dad is and was, but most importantly is. And Sunday we had our memorial service for him, and a lot of the friends that he had made and that we had spent time with in my childhood and growing up came out and got together. And I've been learning how to play guitar recently, so many of them were musicians. So we got together and played some songs together, and one of my dad's friends played one of the songs that he had written. And it really made me appreciate that I've had an opportunity to know my dad, as tough as it's been and as hard as it is to find out, you know, what that really all means. But I'm very thankful, and that's something that I'm starting to realize, and so I appreciate that, and I want to share that with you guys.
Thanks so much. And thank you all for sharing your stories tonight. Thank you for your vulnerability. Thank you for your humor. And thanks for sharing all of your experiences. It every month it's something special. We've got a great community here. And thanks for actively being a part of it. Our next conk will be on December 10th. Same time, same place, right here at 7 p.m. And the theme will be gift. So start thinking now get your stories together, and we'll love to hear them next month. This month's podcast will be posted shortly on growradio.org. Check it out. We'll probably post a link on the Conk's Facebook page. So again, like us if you haven't. And thanks one more time to Satchels and Lightning Salvage for hosting us. And thanks one more time to all y'all. Have a great night. See you next month.